This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
People of Power, 9 minutes past 11. Welcome back to the final hour of Power Talk. It is a Friday. It can only mean one thing. We are having an open conversation. And this morning, I'm chatting to the executive mayor of the Midvaal local municipality, Bongani Baloyi. He has begun his sort of countdown to leaving office. 23 days left today. I mean, he could actually go for another term, if I understand correctly, because he started off as an MMC and not as a mayor. So he finished off a term and then took a full term in 2016. When he started off, he was what many would call a young lad. What a young lad. And he has been, for all intents and purposes, celebrated for the performance of the Midvaal local municipality. We just want to get his reflections, you know, how the journey has been, where he is today, where he thinks he will be going post this moment of, you know, transition away from local government, at least at the coal face of it, as a mayor. You can be part of the conversation, of course, on 0861-987-000. Bongani, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, thank you for the opportunity to have a conversation with Power listeners and yourself.
No, thank you for making time. Bongani, I mean, 10 years ago, you were 2011. This was 2011. You were in charge of overlooking for, you know, development and planning in the municipality as MMC. Then 2013, you became mayor. Perhaps let's start off to just say, at that young age, I won't give your age away without consent. It's okay. But let's start off at saying, at that young age in your 20s, what attracted you to local government?
Look, I think it was the irritation of the slow pace of delivery that made sense for me. And it was through engaging with mayors at that point and having conversations around them, around my frustrations around delivery with the things that I felt is important for young people, at least my community in Daleside. So I realized that there's actually an opportunity for me to not be the person who's always complaining and pointing and what is wrong, to actually do the most difficult part and try and fix it. So I decided that's the course of action I'm going to take and do the difficult part and try and fix it and deal with whatever one has to deal with to be able to attain that goal. And that's how really it started. And fortunately, I mean, I come from a family that's very politically inclined. Mm. So and where would they encourage you to follow your purpose and to follow whatever that you want to pursue. So it was quite easier for me to pursue such a course of action. And one has stood by it and seen it through. And now look where I am today.
I mean, we are going to get to talk about where you are. Talking about that family, you know, politically inclined, how did they receive your choices? Were their choices always inclined towards your political choices because you went there to serve under the banner of the Democratic Alliance? Or was it a struggle to convince that, you know, I am making the right choice, don't worry about me, I will be in good hands?
Look, it was tricky initially because my family from my father's side is ANC through and through. So, and my grandmother is still in the Women's League of the ANC still today. But I think over a period of time, it made it easier for them and they understood that, look, freedom of choice is what people fought for. So do the best that you can do. So it made it easier. It was difficult for me. I mean, when we attend family gatherings, it was difficult. You could feel the strain. And some who feel that you've almost taken the family cows and gone to sort of sell them. So it was really difficult. But I think persistence and engagement in the family made it easier. And today, I mean, things are much more easier. You can join whatever political party and leave the next day and go for another. So, yeah, I think
There's greater mobility than probably there was 10, 11 years ago. And I wonder if, do you remember the first time you wore a DA t-shirt at a family gathering and how that was?
Yo. In fact, we were slaughtering that day when I came from a meeting and I was wearing a DA t-shirt. You know, and generally it's known in the family that when we slaughter, my role is very specific. I'm the one who takes the life. I was the one holding the hind leg.
You were demoted, effectively.
I was demoted that day. I could not deal with such a demotion without my consent even.
Yeah, and I'm sure you protested profusely afterwards to say no, but this thing can't happen next time. You've got to respect me. Bongani, let's talk about the entry into the Midval local municipality as councillor. What kind of municipality did you find, and what were some of the immediate things you thought you needed to attend to as a collective at that time?
When I started, obviously, initially, it was one did not immediately identify where the low-hanging fruits are. It was shock initially when I just came in as a councillor from just being a normal person who had not been exposed to government. So it was initially shock and frustration of understanding the bureaucracy. Mm. And then from there, it became trying to deal with the rejection of new ideas, new thinking, which really frustrates you. I mean, people were saying that this one is young, give him 2 months or a year, he'll be tired, he'll stop asking questions or trying new things. Instead, I was persistent. And then it became realizing that I must deal with the deficit, the knowledge deficit, and institutional memory deficit. Mm. But it took me about really 2.5 years to be able to understand my environment and start to see what I thought is the low-hanging fruits, which then dealt with issues of performance, with how we were reporting issues and the planning and where the money was going. Mm. And then it got deeper into the institutional culture and of how the institution related to Black people from a staff component and retaining and attracting talent, and from a community component. So it was really interesting because I could sense even the divide in the community, but I could also sense even where we were allocating the resource and the apprehension towards the investment towards Black communities. Mm. So when people, I mean, criticize us about the lack of investment in Black communities, I mean, that's something that I think I have defeated in the institution about 6 years ago. So the institution we have today and its approach and its reception to Black talent and Black areas generally is far more different than what I found. And it's something that I'm really proud of to have been able to tackle boldly. And even though some people are fighting back against it, but to have been able to deal with it decisively.
I mean, Bongani, I want to take you a little back. I mean, that 2.5 years mark, and that's you just being honest as to, you know, the time it takes you to acquaint yourself with the institution, appreciate what has gone on before your time, and then to be able to identify quite clearly from a structural analysis point of view what needs to be done. This is clearly something that we need to keep in mind, Bongani, as we talk about, you know, local government, the election of new councillor, and this is why there's a growing language even from a big organization such as the African National Congress talking about the need to for retention of some of these councillors. But then democracy doesn't always work like that. You almost can't preempt democracy that somebody will return as a councillor candidate. It will depend on the processes. But it seems as if the high turnaround, or the high turnover rather, of councillors is a significant concern, because I mean, I can imagine if you had a council that is entirely new, 70%, and it would take 2.5 years to acquaint itself, and that's just you being honest. How can we think of closing these gaps, these knowledge gaps, about, you know, especially for new councillors, because it has impact in how they do their work or how they boldly are able to express themselves in doing their work?
Look, I think a combination of factors. One, it's the start of the selection of the candidates themselves by their political parties. Mm. Also, we must insist upon some level of standard which must be informed across the board, which ensures that you elect an individual who has the minimum quality. So we must really deal with that, because then you try and prevent some chap who his best asset is to sing and insult people who can't relate with the key financial documents or even some legal documents to be able to make an input and understand what is happening in the environment. The second part, which does mitigate against new entrants is a capable civil service.
So
if we can professionalize that to the extent that the law allows us to, then it makes it easier, because one of the biggest assets I had was the professional service, I mean civil servants that we had in the municipality, who really I was sponging off from the institutional memory point of view and engaging. So they provided a cushion for me to land on to be able to deal with the memory. But at the same time, democracy must still do its work as well. And to be able for people to go and engage with communities, come and land their manifesto and implement their manifesto. But I think given these two things, one of the selection of the candidates themselves, and secondly, a professional civil servant, which is able to support those who come into the office and advise them. But then at the same time, then you need an executive which can actually grapple with the complex environment of local government, which is extremely difficult.
Absolutely. I mean, local government is no easy space at all. Bongani, please take a short break. I want to pay some bills. People of Power, I am in conversation with Bongani Baloyi. He is on that countdown, saying 23 days until he leaves office. We will get a sense. How was it the first time he took that seat? I'm not sure if there are chains in Midvala. I know in Durban, Etegwini, there are chains, and he got a chain around his neck. They are usually very big chains. You can't wear them for leisure, trust me. 0861-987-000 is the dial if you want to be part of this conversation.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mguni. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
22 minutes past 11. My open conversation guest this morning is Mayor at the Midvaal Local Municipality, Bongani Baloyi, and he is counting down 23 days before he leaves office, and he has been lauded for presiding over a council that has continuously performed well, at least according to the standards of the Auditor General in South Africa. 0861-987-000 is the dial where you can be part of this conversation. Bongani, let's go back to that moment in 2013 when you first take the seat as mayor. Like I said, I don't know if there are chains there in Midvaal. They tend to be very, you know, heavily looking. How was that moment, and what was the composition of council when you first ascended as mayor in Midvaal Local Municipality? And did you ever worry that your age could be a limitation?
Well, the composition of council was, I think, about 54%, so we're not too worried about the majority. Mm. And in that specific moment, I think was a tsunami of emotions. It was fear, excitement, anxiety, and many others as well in a specific moment. And just because I realized the importance and the significance of that moment for the next phase of my life, but equally the load I would then immediately take on my shoulders. And also, I appreciated the level of doubt and apprehension people had towards me after that, because here's a 26-year-old who's now elected as the mayor of a municipality to lead such a municipality, and he's not proven himself really. So people had were justified in doubting my capability and ability, and more so when you think of a 26-year-old in these days, you even think of someone dancing with a savannah on top of their head. So when you think of the level of seriousness and complexity of the business of local municipality, you would not think that such a young person would be able to deliver adequately. So it was recognition of all of those things in that moment, and deciding to, at that specific moment, whether I want to succeed or not. And if I wanted to succeed, then that had to be 90% of my life. And if I wanted to just make this out for fame and all of those other reasons, then it would just be a fun thing to do with no seriousness and not the real dedication on sacrifice. Mm. But I decided to really up and make it 90% of my life.
Absolutely. I mean, you are talking about that moment. And then, you know, also, Bongani, within your own organization, I'm sure you still had to reach out, make sure there's consensus building. And politics are always at play in these things. How are the politics like when you now reflect? I'm sure you can reflect honestly. It's such a long time ago. And even some people who might have been part of it probably have forgotten about it now. How are the politics at play? You know, sometimes there are always these trade-offs, meetings on the sides before things actually become. How do you define the politics that created that moment for you?
I think for me, it was much easier because we went through a process in our party to appoint a mayor.
Yeah.
So once we had gone through that, one had to wait about 20 days, which was extremely difficult. So you're quite right with the consensus building component insofar as my first year of being the executive mayor within the municipality, because I recognize that one, you have to lead with people and take people with you, but you also need to be able to build some level of competence and allow a conversation to continue until a decision must be taken and not frustrate the decision-making process. But the only way one could do so was to lead with people. So for about a year, I was quite insistent on achieving consensus and accommodating everyone to the extent possible, which allowed for me to settle into my work and build the confidence and the trust amongst the people that one was working on, because I needed the time. So I had to use my time carefully. I didn't want to have these unnecessary battles because all of a sudden I've got power and I must use it. So I needed to be quite deliberate and understanding with how I'm going to utilize this power and to what end, and how you utilize it in a delivery methodology so you don't walk away 10 years later without any sensible impact and things you can point at. So I took that time just to do so, but pursued consensus and trying to influence people. And that's the most difficult part. You know, when people tell you about leadership, they tell you you must just be able to influence. You don't recognize the difficulty in having to influence.
And the ingredients that go into influencing.
Exactly. People don't realize. I mean, I had to make some trade-offs initially. And
yeah.
I mean, I was in someone who, and remember, these the 80% of the people I work with are old enough to be my mother and my father. So there's an age gap as well, which makes it difficult. And now you must learn to socialize with people who are that age. And you start realizing some of the barriers of socializing. I mean, I was someone who was a non-drinker, non-smoker. And even from a life experience component, it makes it difficult. But, you know, I had to go beyond my own limitations to try and reach out to people.
And at least go, even if you're not drinking, but go where people take a drink from. Not say, I'm Nandingeni, a tavern or something like that.
And that was my mentality, which is long enough, plan. But you start realizing, no man, hey, these you must start engaging with people in their comfortable spaces.
Yeah.
So those are the things you make and trade-offs you make in pursuing to influence people and better understand the people that you're working with and build genuine relationships.
And of course, then, Bongani, there are issues around public participation that are also important. How did you make sure that you don't, you know, just go on public participation roadshows as a way of ticking the box that indeed the IDP went on a roadshow?
Look, for me, it was quite important. One of the things we did immediately, we tripled the amount of public participation and the access that we have or giving to our communities, because we realized that there'll be forever this doubt in our communities. So I must go in there and do it regularly and build a relationship with them and be able to persuade and influence the community. And remember, this is a community that we may have moved from Tawaza and much earlier on, but I really also grew up in Midvale and people know me. So it was quite interesting when you're seeing your old school teachers and when the conflict is always linked to the guys who start conflict there in that ward. We grew up together, then we had issues, amantombazane start cool, ashana ngeitina, and then it manifests in the public meetings and there's issues. Then you grow. I mean, you understand the troublemakers in your community. You end up having full control of those meetings. And that's where you realize that, you know what, now through the amount of dedication and work and delivery, not just promises, you are able to move to another level and stage with your community.
Bongani, please stay on the line, and I'm going to go to Power News headlines and come back after what you have said about being a non-drinker and non-smoker. I just got a text that says maybe he's not married, can't fuck guys, but story for another day. Maybe future project. Bongani Baloyi is my guest, Mayor at the Midvale Local Municipality, 0861-987-000 if you want to be part of the conversation. Let's do it.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mbini. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
Indeed, and you can also tweet me at Lukhona Mnguni, hashtag Power Talk. My guest is Bongani Baloyi this morning on this open conversation, just reflecting, you know, on his time, his thoughts in local government. Malisela, I see you, Khotso and Mzwake. I'm going to come back to you just now. Bongani, I mean, you have been lauded, and I'm seeing a tweet from Zolani Zonyane talking about, you know, how you have played a role in ensuring good governance, and he puts it as, you know, congratulations on leading to maintenance of good financial governance. I hope whoever fills his shoes will make Midval, will take Midval beyond clean audits, work with all other stakeholders to deliver basic services of all citizens. Now, Bongani, there's always this big talking point around, you know, clean audits and service delivery. In fact, I was involved in a study with the Auditor General a few years back where we sampled six municipalities across three different provinces in the country. You don't always find a great synergy between good audits and service delivery. How did you try to ensure that once you at least have some rhythm in achieving, you know, the good audits, you are able to turn your attention to ensure that there's also service delivery? Because some councillors have said to me before, in fact, the pursuit of good governance at times makes us slow down even in the number of projects we do, because we feel we want to do the ones that we can to such a great extent that they are successful and there's no wastage or irregularity. Therefore, you then end up not doing as much as you can for fear of adverse outcomes. How do you straddle this conversation on service delivery and good audits?
Look, I generally believe that there is a direct correlation between good governance and the attainment of a clean audit, and with then it manifests into service delivery. And then one must ask the question, what is service delivery? Just loosely, what is service delivery? So it's you're looking at a few trading services, which is When people speak, then and when they say there's no service delivery, they mean the following: there is no electricity, there is no water, municipal roads are not being maintained, and sanitation and waste removal. Those are just the five basic ones, right? So when people make a statement, often they often refer to other competencies that are the key competence of a provincial government. So when you look at delivery, the service delivery and good governance, it's then the ability of a municipality to plan and execute within time and on budget. It seems very simple to be able to simplify something like this, but you have to ensure that whatever you put on the budget, which is a system that we've really refined, that I don't speculate when I do budget. I know exactly what we are doing, where we are doing it, and how long it's going to take us. So you have your pre-planning that's done already. So our ability to be able to execute is actually something, I mean, we were very ruthless when we've approved on something. So I'm linking this conversation to practical things, to what is the service delivery in the key trading services. Yeah. The secondly is the budget process, which is very important because it allows us to be able to deliver an improvement on those five trading services. Then at the end of the year, every financial year at the end, we are able to say how much we've improved in water access, roads with patch, and the maintenance of the other services as well. So it's also a frustration, because maybe it's the terminology when you say clean audit, then the perception that people have that there's no problems, everything is good, not understanding that we are still straddled by the limited resources, the challenge, the macroeconomic challenges we face in the country that we find ourselves in. So those manifest in our localities as well. And you still do find poverty, unemployment, and more so youth unemployment as well. You still do find that. So when people speak about whether there's a correlation of the two, I argue strongly that there is a direct correlation of the two. Because when we plan properly and don't do unnecessary stretch targets, if you've got 100 million, you can only spend 100 million. What we can do and what we've done in Midval regularly is to be able to start early. So when we get to an adjustment budget, we've got a sense of whether we'll be able to spend the entire 100 million, or we can derive a saving from that, because things happen and you do find saving of maybe 2%, 3%. So by the time we get to January in the new calendar year, we are able to reallocate in the adjustment budget process. And you see those as then as a consequence of early planning, and not speculative planning or inclusion in your budget.
Mm.
So when we deliver, we are quite specific about this. So I argue strongly, because to be able to achieve clean audit, it says something about your deliverology of services, your efficiency and effectiveness as an institution, and that ultimately improves the output, which is the service delivery.
Well, if you are a councillor candidate and you are listening in and you might just take up a seat in council, we are getting a bit of a 101 on how to do things right. Let's go to that line, Bongani, on 0861-987-000. I'll take three and then just share your thoughts in whatever it will be raised with you. Malisela, good morning.
Morning, Mguni. How are you?
I'm well. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thank you. Bongani, my question is what makes
Malisela, I'm losing you a little. Can you just move?
Can you hear me?
Move a little more.
Can you hear me?
Snetemba, can I take that line back to you and just make sure that you clean it up for me? Khotso, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm well.
Well, Mr. Mkune. Look, man, quickly to Mr. Bongani.
Mm.
Let me start by firstly congratulating him on the stealing job which he did in Midval.
Mm.
Yeah, that one, for such a young person, indeed, it is true that we still have young, capable leaders, black excellence, who can still see it within the public service. But my question to Mr. Bongani, I'm still asking myself, how did he survive for so long under the DA? Because DA doesn't want to see any black leader thriving.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two, just to check, because Midval is not is still trapped in poverty.
Mm.
You still find areas whereby in the informal settlement, the farming, things have not changed. Although he might be having those, I hear him, they argue the issue of clean OT, the state well, but the issue of changing the structural phase on the ground is important, because you cannot enter an area seeing informal settlement and leave while in informal settlement. Something must give.
Okay.
Something must give.
Khotso, thank you so much. Mzwake, good morning.
Good morning. You know, Lukol and Bongani, there is a hypothesis by two disgruntled former DA members that independent candidates are the best way to go.
Mm.
Now, you were talking about consensus building earlier on.
Yeah.
Is it really, is independent candidate really the silver bullet that the two disgruntled gentlemen make it out to be?
Okay.
I don't think so, but I'd like to hear from Bongani what he thinks.
Catch it on the radio. Thank you, Dada. Malisela, let's try again. Good morning.
Morning. How are you, Mguni?
Fantastic. You are in a much better line.
All right. Thank you. Bongani, my question is just straightforward. What makes the local government more effective consistently? You know, I mean, I know the issue of money and resources is one of the biggest things, but what are other things that makes local government more efficient in a consistent manner? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Malisela. Let me go back to that line with Bongani. Bongani, you've heard those questions.
Yes, I think I'll start with the last one from Malisela. What makes local government more effective? I think it's in relation, or I'm not sure that directly specific to Midval, but I think the local government is the coalface of service delivery. It's the one that interacts directly with the people, and it's one that people experience. Many people know where their councillor and their mayor lives, but they don't know where their MP or member of the provincial legislature, or even premier on MEC lives. And because they interact with us more, and the challenges we face are more exacerbated because they are in people's face. I mean, it's not as bad as, imagine if the whole issue of SAA was manifesting at a local municipal level. Imagine the type of ramifications there would be, because we are closer. So for us, why is Midval much more effective? I think it's what I spoke about, the process that we follow as a municipality, and how we refine our delivery methodology, and just the ruthlessness of pursuing what we've put as a target for the specific financial year, and the just the planning, the pre-planning as well, and the institutional culture of performance driven, and just moving with things as they happen.
Mm.
So that just has shaped significantly our process as a municipality. The independent candidates, are there a solution? I don't think so. I think political party system, I still have a faith in that. Mm. And you know more about your a political party, what it stands for, its values as well. And you get a sense of what to expect. So I prefer, my personal preference is not to supportive towards your independent candidate.
Mm.
And again, they're independent to some extent. Who do they actually represent? And who's behind all of these things are questions that I think in our democracy we still need to explore as we experience it and be able to refine the mechanism of the independent candidates as well. Then the question asked by Khoso,
yes,
the last one, you come into an area, we're still trapped in poverty, et cetera, et cetera. We have, I think, three main about big informal settlements. That's Peel's Farm. It's on a private-owned parcel of land. We deliver water in that facility. And that Peel's Farm is linked to what the municipality has approved as a housing or human settlements project in Graysview. What has since happened, the provincial government procured that piece of land, now they must build. So from our side, we've done everything. So there's nothing from the municipal side that's stopping people to be relocated also in Peel's Farm and Khayelitsha and Boitumelo.
Mm.
We have done that. So the fact that they are still there is not necessarily because we feel this, because the provincial government has not delivered those houses. Knowing very well that in Stelo alone, it took the provincial human settlements department, about 10 years to deliver 235 houses. You can just imagine the frustration of Stelo.
Mm.
We've de-densified Stelo. We've given about 250 stands to de-densify a part of Stelo so we can relocate people and be able to settle people and deliver services there. In Stelo now, you have water reliably there because we've finished building a reservoir. Now we are installing water in the stands there that we've given to those people.
Mm.
So they may be in shacks, but they are much better off than me and you, Lukonya. Because me and you, when we don't pay our bond, the bank is going to deal with them. In Stelo, they own that parcel of land, and there'll be security of tenure. So and also what people generally don't appreciate about Midvan is that we've got a higher income per capita in the province of Gauteng. So when you think Midvale poverty and a number of things, I think you must look at it in context as well and just do a deep dive. How did I survive in the DA? Firstly, here's the thing about politics or my approach. I joined the DA because I saw even the gaps that are there and I decided I'm going to try and fill those gaps that are there, and I've been pursuing that. Have I failed in many areas to try and do so and not found support? Yes. It doesn't mean I quit. It means I continue.
Mm.
This politics is a long-term game, and you survive. And you must be able to focus on the specific things and compartmentalize. Mm. You can't fight 15 battles. You must know what you are doing and focus in that, and pursue whatever, whether it's a 10-year plan or 15-year plan, and pursue that. So there's no political party which does not have challenges. All of us have challenges. And I've decided that I'm going to play a specific role. I'm going to try and push a specific agenda. It may take me some time X, but I'm going to try until I believe I've failed. Then it's a different conversation then.
But Wangana, I mean, it almost does become a bit of an elephant in the room, in the sense that since you ascended, I would say it was a bit of a different democratic alliance, and we've seen the evolution of the party, and of course the latest controversy really with those racist posters in Phoenix. The party doesn't seem to have the same kind of energy that it had 10 years ago. I know that you appeared very much, cushioned away from those politics and just focused in Midvale, because you're also not part necessarily of all its leadership structures right up to the national level in terms of FedEx and so on. But eventually at some point your voice started growing, and your boldness as well in challenging certain things that you disagreed with in the party really did grow over time, especially in the last 5 years. How would you say you feel politically about the Democratic Alliance?
Extremely concerned because we seem to be grappling with the issue of race and in its various manifestations. And it's something that we must be really honest about. But at the heart of it I think we are confronting a period where we must ask, what is the Democratic Alliance and who is the alliance and what is our, do we still have a reason to exist? I think we won't be able to avoid that question in the foreseeable future. And the answers, if they are honest, will determine whether we are able to sustain this vehicle called the Democratic Alliance, or we will shed and break into many pieces. And I genuinely believe that time is closer than what many of us expect. So these challenges and their manifestations is because we sugarcoating genuine real problems and don't have a deep appreciation that our experiences are very different. So how a person from Soweto, who they've got an experience that they have, and a person from Thokoza like me, would relate to how we understand to be the challenges and issues around racism and race would be fundamentally different. And for me, those are very important things, because it's something that's still a lived experience and reality in my family. I mean, I'll give you one example I've not shared with any media person. My grandfather hated a chap called Mr. Smith. And when I grew up, he used to tell me that this Mr. Smith, who really tormented us and our properties, and when we couldn't afford rates and taxes, they would come and lock us out and check out our furniture. Not knowing that this same Mr. Smith I would later meet, and who then at that stage was then the Speaker of Cape Town. And when I relate the story with my grandfather, I mean, he was extremely angry. And when I realized, because I understood that when he was sharing his background and story, and I was able to link that this is the same person that my grandfather told me about. And you see, this is a lived experience. Now, I'm in the same room and I'm questioning myself, how can we share the same values?
Yeah.
So these are things people from my background, you start to confront, and then you ask yourself of the very deep and very important questions, which is largely existential questions. So these are the things that people bring from my background, and you confront there, and how they manifest will determine whether there still remains a viable vehicle for all of us, or people will have to look elsewhere.
So you're saying the jury is out?
I think it's important. It should happen, because let's rather deal with that question now than wait for later. We need to address this question quite urgently.
Okay, Bongani, let me go back to that line. But before I do that, there is a voice note with a question to you.
Good morning, Lukona. Can you please ask the gentleman there, what is his stance on the placards that were put on polls there at Phoenix? We know what the saying was, that I don't want to say it. Just want to know, what does he think of that? And did they have a discussion about it? Did the upper structure say anything about it? Or what is going on? What is the general feel about that? What is the DSA about that? Is it a mistake because of somebody else is calling out, or it's a mistake because they see it is one?
Okay, got that. Juke, good morning. The Juke of
morning,
the Val Madot. Hey, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Mayor over there.
Good morning, love.
Yeah, well, I would like to congratulate you for the good job done in your town, especially being from the dark skin. But now my question is, my Honorable Mayor, what influenced you to
Juke, build... Your radio in the background is giving me a bit of feed.
Okay. What influenced the mayor to build the flats in Sicelo, knowing quite well that we the dark skin, we got so many things we're doing in our houses. And right now, we're looking for ownership, not rental, because those flats there, our people can never do any traditional job over there. The second question is, what bylaws are you guys using? Because when I drive around Mayotron, I see there's not even small tuck shop in the houses like that. What remedy did you use that you can help the other municipalities in terms of allowing our African brothers just open up anything anywhere in our towns, dismantling the status of the town?
Okay.
As you can see in Vereeniging.
Joke got you loud and clear. Let me run Thank and you. Go to Tembisa. Okay, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you. Let me also start by commending the sitting mayor in Midvale there. I'm saying job well done again. Mm. The integrated development program. That's my question.
Yeah.
Do you go and identify the IDP from the village, or you just so decide? Because sometimes the basic things that needed to be done there are not done. You just put a sort of paving. People are not looking for paving. They are looking for water. They are looking for electricity. They are looking for clinics and all this. So that's my first question. And then again, just to inquire from him, if possible, maybe I can just talk to him offline, because I know I can feel he's doing a good job. And then is it possible for a councillor to sign papers on the project that is incomplete?
Okay, got you, Boke. Bongani, let me give you a chance to respond to those three, and hopefully we'll have time just to close off.
Okay, I'll deal with the ones from Boke. Is it possible for a councillor to sign off papers on an incomplete project? A councillor should never sign off on any project, whether complete or incomplete.
Mm.
That's a pure administrative process which should not involve any councillors. So it would be irregular whether a councillor is signing off papers of a complete or incomplete process, or rather project. The IDP process, I think for us, we've tried to get lots of value out of it to ensure that we engage sensibly with our communities by also getting their full needs. But I mean, we've been very honest with our IDPs to say, you can give us 10 needs, but look, this is what, we can only do 3 in the next financial year. And people have accepted and appreciated the honesty, and we've also delivered on that.
Mm.
So that also helps build the trust in the process, because people start to see that the best way to influence development in your area is through public participation. So what influenced us to build flats in Stelo? Well, Gauteng generally has an issue of densification and issue of the land problem as well.
Mm.
So we must maximize the land that we have, and to ensure that we remain a compact municipality, very resilient, and we must really try and settle our people where there's job opportunities as well. So the flats in Stelo are the first ones that we tried in the area, and quite a number of younger people have actually welcomed those. And because now there's a combination of things. There's your flats,
mm.
you have your site on service, and a few of the RTP houses being built. So it's a combination of approaches that we're using. We do have also tax shops, foreign-owned tax shops in our area, which are giving us problems. So it's not that we've been successful on it, but it's just generally the cleanliness of the area. We're quite strict about that, so they comply with those.
Mm.
And then there was a question around the poster. What did I think? Was I part of it? Like any other general member in the party, I saw the poster being put up. I was not part of it, and I did not support the poster. And we ensured that we voiced it out internally, because I thought it was in bad taste, and we exacerbated the problem and further fueled potential division. I mean, it hit me deeper when I was listening to one of the peace committee members in Phoenix,
yeah.
who was speaking of how hard they're trying to work to build unity with people and build bridges, and what they see the impact of this poster. So hearing it from someone who is there, for me, even confirmed that what I thought of it is actually correct, and it should never have happened.
Yeah, and then on Twitter, Entle says he remembers, she remembers you in class at Wits Business School, and that also you were her referee for her Master of Science. She's humbled by your integrity, and you never mentioned back then you were mayor incumbent, indeed a humble servant. Mbazimashilowa teases you, says Mayor Baloyi is a very competent guy and upright. I tease him that his success is because he went to cut in the village I come from his grandmother. The way he says these things, Mbazima. Bongani, a parting shot. We are out of time. Where to from here? Because I have no doubt a lot of people are asking you that question after what you've done in the past 9 years, 10 years.
Absolutely. Look, I think for me, I've closed the chapter of local government. I've really been fortunate and given the time and the space to do what I've done, and I'm really appreciative of it. And I want to thank the residents of Midval and all those who assisted me on this journey. What's next will definitely be still within politics and still within public service. So we must just watch the time, and we'll see probably in the next month or so.
Are you going to make an announcement?
Yes, definitely.
That's bold. Now you are going to leave us in suspense for?
For until I make the announcement.
End of November?
That it may be still too soon, maybe towards the end of November, early December. I must also think and just get some time out of what I've been doing and try and take a moment to breathe and reflect properly and determine the next move.
We will definitely be looking out for that, Bongani. And I must say, I wish you well in your journey beyond local government. I mean, you are still youth after all. There's plenty that you can still do and put your mind and energies to. But I think, I mean, the sentiment shared by many people that Midval has been a shining example, not only of good governance, but also what young people can do when given an opportunity to lead. And I think that you've stood as well as young people to demonstrate that indeed, given an opportunity, we are capable, and not to be told that we are leaders of the future. So thank you very much and best wishes.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Bongani Baloyi, Mayor at the Midval Local Municipality. Of course, he is counting down 23 days till he finishes. He'll take some time off, and then he promises to make some announcement about his future. Well, an announcement that we can make confidently is that we are going to the weekend now here at Power Talk, because our time is up. And then Power Lunch comes between 12 and 3 p.m. with Faith Mangope. But before you get there, we just want to say thank you to everybody who makes this possible here at Powerhouse. And Tlatlase Hume, please give us news.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.